anybody that's eating right now, put
food
down.
Yeah, put down your nutty fudge and listen to the story as I tell you a tale.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to Comes With Baggage. Happy Tuesday, everybody. This is Caitlin.
And this is Chris.
And we have a quite random, but I'm actually a bit excited about it, episode today.
Yeah, we had a little bit of a last-minute debacle. We had a guest lined up. We were going to discuss au pairing and travel, and we will circle back to that later when we can make that work again. But she had to cancel because she's doing finals right now. So
we had to think on the spot and come up with something. And I thought it would actually be fun to have listeners and followers and stuff write into us with some of their burning travel questions for us to just answer, give what our opinions on, share stories that we might have related to them. Some of them are like advice sort of questions and some of them are just fun.
It's like the ultimate low effort episode. We just were like, you guys just give us the topics and we're just going to spit knowledge. Well, not even knowledge. We'll spit anecdotes pretending to be knowledge back at you.
Exactly. But before we dive in, if you guys are listening right now, please rate, review, and subscribe. It's been a little silent on the reviews lately. So if you haven't reviewed us yet, please take a second and leave us a quick rating and review on iTunes because it really does help us out and we love to read them. So rate, review, subscribe, airdrop to strangers so they can listen to all of our
nonsense.
I was going to say wildly entertaining conversations.
But okay, yeah. Potato.
Works too. But real quick, what have you been up to?
Not a great deal. Still here in chilly, misty, rainy Seattle for another week leading up to Christmas.
I don't think you were in Seattle after we spoke to Chris. You were getting ready to fly there.
Oh, so that's right. That's because we're recording this a week later than originally planned. I was like, yeah, we recorded last week. So I've flown up to Seattle where we're spending Christmas and we've just been catching up on work, doing all of the Christmas shopping and seeing friends. We played some fun board games yesterday, so that was good. And
What'd you play?
We played Unstable Unicorns. Have you played that one?
Never even heard of it.
It is amazing. It's like you've got unicorns, obviously, and they're all a bit weird. And it's like a four-way battle game. So like you can like kill their unicorns or steal their unicorns. And it's very fun. It's simpler than it sounds. Like the rules are very straightforward, but there's a lot of complexity in how you can play it and the strategy of it and stuff, which was a lot of fun. So hopefully someone gets me that for Christmas, if you're listening, Mom.
It's a board game, not a card game?
No, it's a card game. So it's just, it's kind of like, have you ever heard of like Magic the Gathering or the Pokemon card game where you've got like a deck and you have a hand of cards you can play from? It's like that.
No, I haven't, but I have played a pirate game that I think is similar to that.
Okay, yeah,
like,
I mean, there's
draw,
a lot of...
like different types of like pirates and mermaids and stuff like that, but then you have to like kill each other's or like
similar. Yeah, yeah, you like put unicorns in your stable and you try and take them out of other people's stables. It sounds really silly and it is, but it was actually a lot of fun and we drank a lot of beer, so I was very hungover. It was a good time. We don't get to do a lot of socializing with how much travel we do. So it was good to have like a whole evening sit down dinner and board game night with some friends. What about
and
you?
How is it getting to spend, you were in like warm, hot LA for Thanksgiving and now you're in cold, chilly Seattle for Christmas.
Yeah, it is brisk. It's not even the cold that's bothering us. It's just that the weather's so like rainy and grim that there's not really any incentive to go outside. So there's been like a couple of days where we literally, the only time we go outside is to like get packages off the front deck. It's just much safer inside. But we're here in like Edmonds, which is north of Seattle, right on the Puget Sound. So it's beautiful. So when the weather is not awful, we go for a walk, we catch some Pokemon, we get coffee or whatever. It's been very relaxing.
Nice.
We're gearing up to fly to the UK next week. So that'll be...
Yeah.
This is our last... The lull before the storm.
Speaking of getting packages off of the front porch, have you seen the hashtag that's been... Well, I don't know if it's been like trending, but I follow an Instagram called Good News Movement.
Mm-hmm.
And they posted this video of this woman that had left like treats out for delivery workers, which I know has like kind of been a thing for a couple years. But there's a video that she got on her like you know, like front door camera thing of this delivery guy coming and seeing it. And like, he's so excited and he's like talking to himself and he's like, oh man, this is amazing. And then he like starts to leave and to like walk down the path and he's like, does a little dance. And then, so this like, this Instagram page that's got a huge following shared this video and said that they wanted to, like, they had a bunch of people like respond to it. And so they started this hashtag delivery worker appreciation to encourage people to do the same thing. And so many people have been doing it and sharing their videos. And it's so good. If you haven't seen it, go That's look adorable. At the hashtag on Instagram. And there's still time. So if you're listening to this, I encourage people to do it. I don't have like a front porch to do this. Like if I thought about it, like if I mean, I live on a high street in London. So if I left a basket out, like it'd just be fucking random people walking by that would just take all of the stuff.
That's a good idea because we've got so many packages arriving right now before all the Christmas presents were getting organized and last minute packing. So that any given day, there's like 3 to 10 packages being dropped off and they're not all coming at once. So we should totally be leaving some love out for the delivery guys.
You should. You should just get like the packages just include like little like snack packs you put in like kids' lunches and then like some like bottles like of water and some Red Bulls.
I'll see what can be arranged.
Yeah. If you do, send me a picture. I'll share it on our Instagram.
All right, can do. What have you been up to?
I went to the Capital FM Jingle Bell Ball. Yeah, so it's like, you know how like radio stations have their like Christmas concerts that they have and like invite a bunch of like artists to come and perform a few songs?
Mm-hmm.
So me and my mom and my sister went. My sister's 9, so it was on like a Saturday and a Sunday. There's 2 nights of it, and we went to the Sunday one. And it was like the headliners were Sam Smith and Taylor Swift.
Oh, damn.
And so, yeah, I mean, they get huge people.
I was waiting for you to like trundle out to like obscure Britpop people. And I'd be like, yeah, I'm glad to hear you got to see Edward and the Thwubs.
No,
good music.
No, and there were some like people, it was about, I want to say 10 artists.
Huh.
And most of the audience were like 12-year-old girls and their parents, which mm-hmm. was like a little bit strange. So there was a lot of artists that I had no idea who they were. And so I would take those times to like go get more beers and go to the bathroom. But Sam Smith, I like his music, but I've never really like, I wouldn't say I'm like a follower, like a fan of him, but oh my God, he was amazing.
I just feel bad for him and Adele. They've gone through some shit. Like every song those two write is just the saddest breakup song ever. I'm like, someone just love them.
You'd be surprised though. Some of his stuff, like recent stuff, is pretty good. And he, like, also I think he got discovered because he was the singer on like a Disclosure song.
Oh, yeah, I know the one. Yeah.
Latch, yeah. I think is the name of it.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, and so he performed that, which I like got up and was like dancing. And then The Script, who are like a pop rock band.
I know The Script, yeah. That was big a few years ago.
Yeah, so they played and like none of the kids knew who they fucking were. All the kids were sitting down and you see all of the moms and like 30 to 40 old women who were literally just there to see them. Were,
dude,
like,
The Script had some bangers a few years
ago. Oh my God.
How to Save a Life and I'll Look After You. Is that them? Yeah, Break Even. Man, they were big in like the mid 2000s.
Oh my God, it was so good. And there was a group of like 5 women in front of us who must have been in their 30s and they were like FaceTiming their friends. And there was one, they were FaceTiming this girl and she was in a towel. They were like sitting 3 rows ahead of us so I could see the screen, like the screen of their person. She's in a towel and she's like singing along and they're like crying.
That's adorable.
It was so cute. So cute.
Nice.
Yeah, but it was on a Sunday and it didn't end. Like my sister was like falling asleep through halfway through it because she's 9 and it was a Sunday night. But we were like, she really wants to see T Swift. So like we have to stay. And we got like 3 songs in and it was already 10:30.
Oh,
and
wow.
We still had like an hour journey back to central London. My mom still had an hour train with my sister to get her back home. She had school the next day. It was, God, we were so tired, but it was
damn.
Fun. And it was very Christmassy. So that was fun. But yeah,
nice.
That's about it.
Well, I think your live music with T Swift and The Script might trump my Unstable Unicorns, but it sounds like you both had a fun weekend at least.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
Cool.
So,
well,
shall we jump into all of the advices and the questions we've been sent?
I think we should. We both got some queued up. Do you want me to go first?
I'll let you go first because some of my friends are weird. So let's ease people in with your sane friends and our Instagram following, and then I'll go to the one about poo.
Okay. Well, we've got Hello Megan O, who you guys might remember from our study abroad episode. She used to be a study abroad advisor, and she came on as a guest. And great episode if you haven't listened to it yet. I think it's called Study Abroad 101.
Yep, that sounds about right.
From our first season. So she sent in a few questions. One of them that I really liked was, you have to get a travel theme tattoo right now. What do you get?
Oh, I can answer this like right away because I've been planning this.
What would you get?
So I've always wanted to get a sleeve. Like probably.
Do you have any? Wait, real quick. Do you have any tattoos?
I don't have any tattoos yet, no, because I've been trying to get the right one.
I want to say that's very rare for a traveler.
I know. I'm like one of the few people I know. Like my wife has one. My brother and his partner have one. My 19-year-old brother has a massive sleeve and like half chest tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get a sleeve, and I'm torn between two options here. One is to get each tattoo to be a like a replica of the passport stamp for that country.
Oh, yeah.
But that seems a bit bland to me. So what I'd really like to do is get sort of all woven together by an artist, one thing that represents each country that I've been to so far. So for Singapore, it would probably be the merlion, which is a lion with a fish's back half. For South Korea, it might be the Korean symbol that's sort of so famous, the red and blue. Or it might be the Great Wall for China, or for Japan, it might be a cherry blossom tree. But I want to get an artist to actually weave those elements together first into like a coherent picture, and then get that as a half sleeve or full sleeve.
That sounds amazing. I'm sure you could find someone. There's some really talented tattoo artists.
Well, my brother got a tattoo done in China by a really talented graphic artist there. And he's really into some video games. So she did this elaborate, I'm talking like the most elaborate tattoo you'll see. Demons and angels fighting in heaven and all this madness. And it goes all the way down his arm, and it's beautiful. And she drew that from hand and then tattooed it. So I'd probably work with her and be like, these are the elements I want. Can you stitch these together into kind of a mural style thing? And then we can put that on my arm. But it's just a matter of actually figuring out what I want to represent each country. Thankfully, I've only been to 25 so far. So it's not like when I hit Europe, I'm so fucked. Cause then it's like suddenly my numbers jump to like 60. And then I'm going to have to come up with 60. I think I just picked my like 20 favorite countries.
You just got to get then the other arm done, and then you get to get the legs. And before you know it, you're just going to be fully covered from neck to toe.
Yeah. And I'm going to get a tramp stamp of Australia. Just being like, g'day mate, right above my butt.
I mean, if you were going to get a tattoo for Australia, it'd have to be a tramp stamp for sure.
Yeah, a tramp stamp of like a koala fucking an emu fucking a kangaroo or something. Classy.
Or the Southern Cross if you're like every other fucking Australian.
No, the Southern Cross is tainted now. Only white supremacists use the Southern Cross.
I have a lot of Australian friends that have that, and they like all got it when they were like 17, 18, and they all already regret it.
I really wanted, that was the first tattoo I ever wanted, was a Southern Cross, and then a few years passed without me getting it, and suddenly you see all of these really angry bogans wearing it and saying like, go back to your country, and I'm like, oh, I'm glad I did not get that. My sister-in-law, who's Irish-Australian, has a Southern Cross of shamrocks that she got when she was 17, and she has to hide it because she's embarrassed by what that represents now, even though the shamrocks are obviously Irish and sort of softening a little. She's like, oh, if I'd known people were going to ruin it for me, I wouldn't have got this on my shoulder.
Yeah. Would you get color or black and white?
Oh, color, for sure. I like color. Yeah. I mean, I know it fades, but I just feel like it's better for representing the countries themselves. Like Tanzania, without color, would kind of look bland. It really needs to pop. They love color.
Yeah. That's a hard thing for me, like with picking something to answer this question. Like all of my tattoos are black and white. I've got 9, I think.
Oh, wow.
I tried to count them earlier. And I've got one travel-themed one, I think. I've got the coordinates for an island in Croatia that's one of my favorite places, and I love it. I don't even know what I would get. Like, I don't want to be like, having – because I when I read that question, I was like, I'm not going to think about it because I really want it to be on the spot. But now all I can think about is getting, like, fucking paper airplanes, which everyone fucking gets those.
Oh, they do?
I do love, I know you mentioned passport stamps, which I know I've seen a few of those before, but I do have a friend that she's got a full, is it a full sleeve, half sleeve, on her shoulder and upper arm. That is of, it looks like her passport book. Like, it's of every passport stamp that she's ever gotten. And it's like the actual dates and how faded or how, like, because you know how like some stamps are like really there and then some are really faded.
That's
like
cool.
It's
That's
exact replicas of her stamps.
Yeah.
And I feel like I could, I don't know if I would do like a sleeve of it, but I would definitely maybe get a couple of those. I like the coordinates idea, but I feel like since I've already got one, it'd be weird to get more. But I could also see, like, because it's on my forearm, just below my, the crease of my arm.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if I thought of like one or two more places that really, really meant something to me, if I got it just below that, it would like to be like to go with it.
Yeah.
It would actually kind of look cool. But I don't know where I would even choose. But yeah, I think those are my kind of ideas.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I think getting a travel tattoo is a great idea. I know a lot of people who do it, like they collect them in country. So like my wife's younger brother, he tours a lot with the band he's in, and he's got one in Indonesia, one in, I think he did one in the South, in New Orleans recently. And they're not necessarily super representative of where he is, but the style is. Like the Indonesian one looks like it was done in Indonesia. Like it's got sort of some stylistic elements that you might not get on something you got done in Australia.
Yeah.
So I've always wanted to do it. I just haven't, when I was young, I was too much of a coward. Now that I'm older, it's more that I'm just too picky. Because the other half of me is like, I want to get like some of my favorite video game and TV show and movie characters on like another arm. But then it's like, when am I going to have the time and money to sit down and get my body painted? So
yeah. Well, one that just came to mind that I actually wanted to get, because I loved Mexico so much. And I got a couple in Mexico. I've got a very poorly done like candy skull on top of my foot. But
nice.
I was fucking hammered when I got it. But I love it because it does remind me of when I was in Mexico. And then I have a palm tree, like very lightly, like fine lined palm tree on my like back kind of side, which I really love that one as well. And I always have people, like if I'm wearing a certain cut top that can see it, I always have people taking like strangers come up and ask me to take pictures of it. And I'm like, now I've probably got like 50 people out there that have the same tattoo
weird.
As me. But when I was in Mexico, there was a group of guys that we were talking about getting matching tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
And, I love tequila. Like, tequila is a big thing in my family. We're always drinking it at, like, celebrations and stuff like that. And we just, like, we were discussing with the guys I met in Mexico to get something that was, like, representative of tequila. And, of course, we're thinking, like, agave plant, which would be pretty. But then I was also like, what if you just got, like, a circle?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people looking at it wouldn't know what it was, but you would know it was, like, the top of a shot glass.
Oh.
And I actually kind of like that idea, not because of like you would know what it was by looking at it, but I would know what it was when I looked at it, or like what it represent,
which is important, which is the main thing when you're getting it, really.
Exactly. So I would probably get that, just like knowing what it meant to me. But yeah, that's it.
Nice. Well, do you want me to
go
next?
Gonna do one more from Hello Megan O, because
she
gave us three, but we could do a couple of them. So the other one, also, I'm just because I'm curious of your answer. She asked, what is your favorite part of a long haul flight?
Oh, you know what? I do a lot of these because Australia's not near anything. I actually really enjoy, watching a few movies. I know it's silly. There's movies that like I like to categorize as they're plane movies. I wouldn't pay to go see them in the cinema, and I probably wouldn't go out of my way to find them on Netflix.
Yeah.
But, you know, like a cheesy rom-com or like that action movie that didn't look that good, like anything by DC. I will see on a plane. So like on the recent one, I watched like a couple of Liam Neeson movies I'd never heard of. And like one of them was halfway decent. So yeah, I think that's probably my favorite part. Just getting a chance to watch a few movies that I might not otherwise see. That's pretty much it. I don't love long haul flights, and I do some massively long ones. I think my record's 45 hours.
Wow.
I mean, obviously there's layovers in there, but yeah, I enjoy watching a few movies on there. I do try and get a bit of reading done where I can, but it's not always the best environment for getting my reading in. So what about you?
I always go on long haul flights with books with the intention of catching up on reading, because I'm so bad about finding time to do it any other time.
Yeah.
But because like if I'm like traveling on the subway or the tube or whatever, I'm always just listening to podcasts.
Yeah.
Because I get too distracted trying to read, and then I'm like staring at other people. I was not going to say movies as well. I love, like, I will spend an entire 15-hour flight just watching movies the whole time.
Yeah.
And I love it. And it's always, because it is ones that are like usually pretty new, that I didn't pay to go see, and they're not yet available on streaming sites.
Yeah.
So I always feel like I'm like, I've won something. Like, haha, I get to see, like, I've beaten the system. I get to watch this for free without having to, like, you know, go pay for it or stream it or download it somewhere.
And occasionally there's a gem on there, like just one that you missed because you were traveling. Or like, I watched the new Thor movie, like Ragnarok, on a plane, and I totally would have seen it in the cinema. It's one of my favorite movies now, but I just had missed it. And yeah. I was like, this is amazing. I can't believe I didn't go see this at the cinema. What was I thinking? So, and then there's some you just rewatch. Like, I've rewatched, like, the Star Wars movies a couple times over the years just because I know they're reliable, they're enjoyable enough. I don't have to pay close attention, so I can dink around on my phone if I need to, but...
I watched Crazy Rich Asians on a plane, and it was, like, right after it had just... It wasn't in cinemas. Like, I can't remember around what was going on when it came out, but I just, like, could never find the time to go see it, and it was blowing up in the reviews, and I really wanted to see it. Or, like, when I could go see it, there was no one... Like, people had already seen it, so there's no one to go with. Not that I'm, like, I go to movies by myself all the time, but it was just something that I was, like, I just never got the opportunity. And then it was, like, right after it was no longer in theaters. And I was like, this movie was too good. It's not going to be on Netflix or Amazon Prime anytime soon.
No.
And I got on a plane, and it was on there, and I was like, score!
Yeah, it's a good feeling when you... So it's other times you get on, there's nothing that you really need to see, so you're just watching crap. But sometimes there's a gem that you hadn't caught yet, or you forgot. Like I still haven't seen Midnight, you know, the one that won all those Oscars a few years ago.
No.
But I've seen it on planes and kept going, oh, I'll watch it next time. And then, of course, it's not on the next time, but I'll get to it.
The one other thing I will, like, honorable mention for long-haul flights, because normally if I'm taking a long-haul flight, it's international, and you always get free booze. So I get excited about that. Free alcohol.
I meant to say Moonlight, by the way, not Midnight.
I was going
to
say I've never heard of that.
Moonlight, sorry. No, the free booze is great, especially if you have one of those travel, those carry-on cocktail kits that they sell. Because I'm not a huge fan of, like a half glass of whiskey with some flat Coke. So I like to take along, like, an old-fashioned mix or some good Bloody Mary mix or something and kind of spice it up a little bit.
Yeah, I'm usually a wine person on flights, just, like, downing bottles of wine. Although I do like, I know this, we were talking about flights, but I do love, anytime I take the train, you can get really good, like, surprisingly good Bloody Marys on an Amtrak train.
Oh, really?
And so, yeah, like, they have the pre-mixed stuff, but then they add, like, extra, they usually, like, do fresh squeezed lime and, like, put the Tabasco sauce as much as you want in, as spicy as you want it. Like, you can get really good Bloody Marys on an Amtrak. Note to self.
Oh, shit, good to know if I ever take a train in America.
Cool. What do you got now?
So, one of our listeners, Jody, she asked, and this is a kind of a deep question, how have you grown through travel? Which, I mean, I don't even know where to begin, so I might let you go first.
Well, I know that we've touched on this before with you saying, like, you were really shy or, like, not as outgoing.
Oh my God, shy, depressed, overweight, a virgin. Yeah, I was a winner in life before I started traveling.
How have you changed? I lost my virginity.
Relatively quickly.
Yeah, I think I would say, like, I was always really outgoing with friends, like, my close friends, but I was not, like, I would never, ever go up to a stranger and just start talking to them. And so I think the biggest thing for me has been, like strangers aren't that scary. Like, it's not stranger danger all the time. Like, people want to talk, especially when you're traveling and you're meeting other travelers. Like, people want to talk to you. People want to be open, want to know about you, want to be friends with you. And so traveling has really helped me, like, learn to open up and, like, be more outgoing and chatty with people.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's definitely a thing that happened to me as well. I was like you, I was great with my friends, and, you know, at a bar with friends who I could kind of fall back on, I was pretty outgoing.
Yeah.
But not at all when it came to girls. Like, I had a terrible track record with girls. I mean, you don't get to 24 as a virgin on accident. I think for me, the weirdest thing for me thinking about it now, because I've traveled so much, is my life would, and I know a lot of people say this, my life would be so different if I didn't travel. But literally, I work in travel and write a travel blog, and my wife is
you host a travel podcast.
yeah, and my wife is an American girl who I met not just traveling. I met through travel blogging.
Yeah.
So if someone had said to me when I was 24, so hey, just so you know, in like 10 years, you're gonna have a travel podcast, a travel blog, sell safaris to Africa, and be married to a girl who is currently 16 when I was 24. Now, obviously much older, I would have been like, that's all kinds of weird. Because I'm quite a bit older than my lovely wife. Yeah, I would have been like, no, what? I had no interest in traveling until I started traveling. Like, yeah. I only left Australia because I found a job overseas that might have been less shit than what I was doing.
Yeah, I mean...
So, yeah, I mean, for me, I think I wouldn't... I think 24-year-old me and current me would struggle to get... You know, would struggle to find a point of commonality beyond being the same person. Like, we just... Our interests have changed. Our outlook on the world has changed. I was one of those, like, nice guys who was just angry because girls didn't like me. So, like, 24-year-old me, it's best that I left him where he was.
Yeah. I definitely like what you said, like, about the people that you've met because of traveling and things like that, and, like, the relationship you now have with Rochelle. Like, I dated someone quite seriously in high school. Like, we were definitely, like, we thought we were going to get married.
Oh.
And then... And thank God that didn't happen. that would have been a terrible marriage. And then even, like, my college boyfriend, like, I still adore him as a person. And, like we're not super close friends. But, like, I got his family's Christmas card this year.
Aww,
like,
that's cute.
We're still friends. But, like, when I was dating him, and, like, at one point I definitely saw us probably ending up together because he was just so lovely. And we got along great. It wasn't like we fought that much at all or anything, but he was very much a homebody. And, mm-hmm. you know, he was on that track to, like, finish university, get a job, like, get married, settle down. And I was on that as well. Not so much the finish university part, but, like, I didn't see myself ever living crazy far away from home ever.
Yeah.
And then if it wasn't for my mom moving to England for my stepdad and me coming over here to visit them and then kind of traveling around Europe and stuff and then wanting to move here to be closer to them, like, I probably would have ended up marrying, like, thinking that I just needed to get a job, settle down, get married, whether it was to him or to somebody else. And, like, I probably never would have, like, left my bubble.
Yeah.
And
no,
same here. I honestly don't think I would have been that happy because it wasn't even something that I loved at the time anyways, but I would have just done it because that's what you do. And it's because I didn't have a reason not to.
Yeah.
And then, like, now I couldn't imagine, like, being happy or not having the experiences or having met the people. Like, I couldn't imagine the people that I've met from traveling not being in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like, all my, like, I mean, obviously I'm still friends with all my old friends, but a lot of the other friends that I've made over the years, like yourself and others, like, it would be weird not having that. If I just had my original core group, it'd be great. But I just feel like I grew so much through the other people I've met along the way. I feel like I'd still be that awkward nerd if I hadn't, you know, gone out, met other people, done other things.
Yeah.
And this is, like, we haven't touched on this at length on the podcast, but, like, I've obviously battled depression my whole life, mm-hmm. and I was probably at one of the lowest points in my life when I started traveling. I honestly don't think I'd still be alive if I hadn't gone out and started traveling, because I was not in a good place and it wasn't looking to get any better without leaving.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it definitely saved my life.
Travel has that effect on people, man.
Yeah.
It's deep shit.
Yeah, let's do a... Do you have a happier question or should I do my poo question so we can make things a little bit lighthearted?
Well, now that you've mentioned it, we can't, like, rob the people
okay.
of that question.
So, CJ, one of those aforementioned friends I made while traveling, asked me to describe my worst shit. CJ is an interesting character.
Obviously.
Yeah. So I'm going to do it. I'm not going to go into gory detail. And it's not actually the movement that sucked. It was just the where I was.
Anybody that's eating right now,
put down your nutty fudge and listen to this story tell you a tale. I was traveling in Xinjiang, which is in far western China. And it's in the news a lot right now because the Chinese government has people in concentration camps there. But it is an absolutely gorgeous corner of China. It's very much like a Central Asian, it's a Muslim state. So it looks nothing like China. The people don't look Chinese. They don't speak Mandarin there. And culturally it's very much like, Kazakhstan or Azerbaijan, that kind of area. Mm-hmm. And I was traveling there and in the same day I managed to get food poisoning. And then we went up to Kunjarab Pass, which is where China meets Pakistan. And I got altitude sickness as well. So I was sick as a dog. Like, I've never been so sick. Both ends, just nauseous, dizzy, barely able to stay awake. And we're driving back to civilization where I can hopefully get help. And I can't hold it any longer. We have to stop at this little town called Opal. And the only toilet there is literally just a raised shack with like a trough carved into the concrete floor, and there's just a mountain. I'm talking like a literal mountain taller than me of human waste underneath it. And there's nothing to, like, you could literally reach down and touch it. Like, if that's how close it is to where you're going. So I am going both ends. I'm just, it's the worst day of my life. And my $600 polo glasses, not sunglasses, my actual, like, need them to see glasses, slip off my face while I'm vomiting and fall into this mountain of shit.
Oh, no. Feed them out?
No, I'm like, fuck it. I don't want them.
So you live there now.
Yeah, I stagger back. I go to, like, wash my hands, and I realize that the trough they use for washing hands is just full of urine. It's filthy. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go. I'm going to lie in the car and die. But the guide who we had on this trip, who was he was Han Chinese, the majority Chinese ethnic group. So mm-hmm. he had a rough trip. Because the Uyghur people from Xinjiang do not like the Han. And they've got reasons. But this guy in particular was lovely. And they would just not talk to him. They would spit when he spoke to them. They were very unhappy to have him there. And there's a whole reason for that I won't get into. But he was so nice. And he saw that I didn't have them. And he ran back in there. And he fished them out. And he rinsed them in that piss-reeking trough. And he hands them to me. And he's got this big smile on his face. Like, look, I saved your glasses. And oh my God. I've never been so reluctant to put something on my face. And I only did for like the split second I needed to for him to see that I was grateful. And then I threw them in the bin. I mean, and they were clean. He thoroughly scrubbed them in that piss reeking trough. So at least they didn't smell of feces, but they stank of urine.
Oh my God.
And so they went in the trash as soon as we got to our hotel.
What a sweet guy though.
I know, but that was the absolute worst. I mean, just the smell, how sick I felt. Like, they don't have seats. You're squatting over this trough in the ground. So I'm like, I'm dizzy, I'm disoriented, the smell is overwhelming, I'm vomiting, and I'm trying not to fall into this mountain of human waste. It was the worst experience of my life. Xinjiang itself is lovely. Their public restrooms are a fucking dog's abortion. Don't go near them. So that's my tale. What was your worst shit?
I honestly don't, this is going to sound so weird, but like, I feel like I don't shit much.
Oh, that's and, interesting. Let's delve into that, shall we?
Well, like, no, and not because of like issues, like I should be. No, I just like, I like feel like I just barely have one a day, and I don't know. They're normal. I mean, I guess I haven't been in countries that don't have like decent, like, honestly, my probably worst shit stories is like being in fucking porta potties at like music festivals and stuff like that.
Have you not traveled to a lot of sort of undeveloped countries?
No,
I mean Mexico is probably the least developed you've been to. Would be right? Or,
well, I went to Bosnia, and okay. I remember being on a bus. Not that Bosnia is not developed, but I just remember being on a bus from Croatia in Split to Sarajevo, and we stopped at this bus stop, and it was like literally the only bathroom break we were going to get. And I run into and you have to pay and you have to buy toilet paper off them and all that stuff. And they're just like, they're the holes over the ground. So you just have to stand and like hover and squat into a hole to go to the bathroom. But
yeah.
Thank God I did not have to shit.
Well, there we go, CJ. I hope that I painted you a word picture that will keep you up at night shivering and staring sightlessly at the roof.
I couldn't imagine. I don't do good with stuff like that. And luckily, ugh, I've never had, like, knock on wood, I've never had food poisoning while traveling. So I've never, like, gotten into a terrible situation.
Wait until you get to Asia. And it's not a shot at Asian food, because Asian food is amazing. It's just, it's street food. So there's so much opportunity for cross-contamination. It's inevitable that you're going to get upset stomach at some point, and sometimes it's, you know, it's worth it. It's it doesn't feel like it at the time, but some of the best meals I've had have made me very, very sick the next day.
Yeah. Okay, moving on from that.
Yeah, let's let's get a palate cleanser, something a little less heavy.
I mean, I don't know if this is less heavy. But Mother Nature is a babe who
another returning guest of Central.
So Janice, who is one part of the duo of Mother Nature is a Babe on Instagram, she was from our Luxury and Debauchery on the High Seas episode, where we talked to her about working on super yachts. But she also does the Mother Nature is a Babe Instagram, which is like eco-friendly stuff. And they're actually going to be coming on the show soon in January, which is exciting. But they asked us one place you will never, all caps, never go, and why.
Ooh. I'm gonna lead straight away and say there's no place I could say unequivocally I would never go, because usually my reason for not going is political. And yeah, thank God that changes. Like, I don't want to go to Brunei right now because it's a homophobic shithole. But in 10 years, who knows? Like, they might clean up their act and become somewhat progressive, and then I'd be open to it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to say something similar of, like, I wouldn't say, like, never say never, mm-hmm. but I don't know, and I don't, like, I feel like this is going to make me sound really terrible, but I would just have a really hard time going to places that are in such, like, treat their people so horribly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know, like, awareness is key of stuff like that, and that's how change happens, is that, you know, it's not an out of sight, out of mind, pretend like it's not there. But, like, I don't think I could emotionally handle being somewhere,
yeah,
where people are, like, so significantly struggling and, like, constantly dying. And, like,
and in countries like that, the majority of tourism revenue usually goes to the corrupt government responsible for that.
Yeah.
Like, I know a few years ago, TBEX, which is a big travel blogging conference, was going to be in Zimbabwe. But a lot of bloggers were upset about that because it was a government-funded and arranged conference, which meant that it would be basically putting money into the pockets of the people responsible for the human rights issues.
Yeah.
So in the end, it fell through. Like, there was just so many people boycotting it, they decided not to do it. And that's the sort of place I wouldn't travel to now, but I can't say never, because, I mean, Rwanda is one of the safest and most developed countries in Africa right now, but 20 years ago, they had the genocide, and you would have been like, oh God, no one's ever going to go to Rwanda. So never, I feel like, is a strong word.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to kind of veer away from that is, I will say that I'm like someone that is so fucking miserable in the cold.
Yeah.
So I can get specific and say, like, I honestly don't know if I would go somewhere that, like, at a time, like, not saying I would never visit this place.
Yeah, yeah.
But maybe not go there at the time where it's like the middle of fucking winter blizzards. Like, I just yeah. would not enjoy myself and would not have fun.
Fair. Yeah. Like, so don't go to the Harbin Ice Festival in northern China or Siberia or.
No, absolutely not. So I think that's more the line, like, somewhere I could say, not so much a place I would never go, but maybe a place at a time that I would never go.
Actually, I got one place I will never go. I will never stay in a Trump-owned property. There we go.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
Because I can say that. It doesn't matter. Nothing's going to change. He's always going to be a shitty person. His family has got the same issue. I would never willingly put money in that turd's pocket.
Yeah. That's
so
a good
go.
Answer.
I've given an answer. Fuck you, Donald Trump.
There's the quote of the episode.
That's the name of the episode. What are you talking about? I'm getting deported. Should I launch into a question then?
Yeah.
You've answered that one. So this is another one that we've got. It's basically saying that certain countries around the world, but this is specific to Africa because they know I know Africa, such as Uganda and Tanzania, have made homosexuality illegal. Is it safe for me and my partner to visit these countries? And that is true. In Uganda and Tanzania, it's still technically illegal to be homosexual. And there's actually a lot of countries where it's still technically illegal.
Yeah, or maybe even if it's not illegal, but you know that they're, like, very,
very homophobic.
Mean and, yeah, like very against it.
So
you can put yourself in danger.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, the short answer is you can. Even though it is illegal in these countries, the law is not strictly enforced. And if it is, it's not strictly enforced for tourists. It's more, I mean, and that if you don't want to support a country that does that, I totally understand. But
yeah.
From a safety perspective, like, you can, as a gay couple, travel in Uganda or Tanzania. Now, the sort of the crappy rule there is you're going to have to act like you are not gay, which doesn't
yeah.
mean you can, like we cannot book a double room for two men, weirdly.
Mm-hmm.
We can book a twin room for two men. We can book a double room for two women because they don't think lesbians exist or something. But we cannot, like, we just can't book a double room for two men. When I do, they ask me, oh, I think you made a mistake. I think you mean twin. And then the other thing is, like, public displays of affection in most conservative countries generally are frowned upon. I did not hold my wife's hand in public in Tanzania because it's just not, it's not done. So the same rule would apply to being gay, but obviously that would be even more frowned upon. So
yeah.
It's an easy question to answer. Yes, it is safe. But whether you want to support a country that oppresses its own homosexual population, obviously is a moral thing that you're going to have to decide. And there are precautions you'll have to exercise just as I mean, just as unfortunately, you've had to exercise in probably most countries until
even
very
Western
recently.
Countries.
Yeah, yeah, like even in rural Australia, I wouldn't necessarily advise, you know, being out and proud. I wish you could be, but I mean, I saw how they treated me as a heterosexual man because they decided I was gay. So God, I don't even want to know how they'd treat me if they knew I was gay, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same in fucking some places that
it's
are in
the
like
same everywhere.
South,
people suck
in the South in America. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think what you said is very true. Like, is it safe? It's more like you kind of have to have this caveat of like, yes, it's safe if.
Yes.
Like, if you behave a certain way, which do you want to go somewhere and have to act like not yourself? And will you enjoy yourself having to be?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. I mean, Africa is, in particular, is we kind of did that. And by we, I mean the West. Like, it's all the Christian missionaries who went there and instilled in them this hateful belief that homosexuality is evil and unnatural. It's like, and they don't have any progressive, I mean, there's obviously people there who aren't homophobic, but they don't have that progressive movement that we've had in the West, thank God, that's sort of slowly starting to change things.
Yeah.
Africa is still very much behind. Uganda literally only just recently changed their laws to be more aggressively anti-LGBTQI because of American missionaries who are associated with Chick-fil-A. So if you enjoy Chick-fil-A, stop it, because they're terrible.
Yeah, I know. Anytime I see people post, even like on Instagram, that they've gone to Chick-fil-A and they're all excited, I'm like, ugh,
they're
stop
the worst.
Supporting them.
Like, they're so evangelical. I just don't get, like, and it's not that much better than KFC, and KFC, at least as far as I'm aware, are not supporting like genocidal regimes in Africa. So get knowledge.
Well, if you are listening and you do go to Uganda and Tanzania, you decide you want to go, I hope that you are safe.
And well, and you know, nice and to talk to me, because obviously I send hundreds of people there every year and we've never had an issue. But yeah, there's just, I mean, it's the same with visiting the Middle East. You'd have similar concerns about safety, I would imagine, because a lot of the countries there also have very strict rules on it. So
yeah,
it's, you know, exercise caution, do your research, talk with the person organizing your tour or the hotel you're going to be staying at and make sure that they're aware, you know, that you're worried about it and they'll take care of you.
Good advice. Good advice, yeah. Chris.
It's me. I'm a safari guru.
This is another advice question. Okay. It's not one that I don't think I can really answer, but I think that you can answer. How tall are you?
Just under 6 feet.
Oh, you are. Okay. But you would class yourself as a bigger guy, right? And
I'm
you travel a lot.
I'm very broad shouldered is my problem. On planes, I have issues getting comfortable.
Yeah. So Caitlin in Chicago asked, and this is kind of long, so I'm going to try and read it, paraphrase. But she's trying to get her boyfriend on a vacation to Europe, but it's flying is really very uncomfortable for him. So he's 6'6".
Yep.
And he's a bigger guy as well. And he usually has to wear a seatbelt extender when he's flying.
So we're talking bigger across as well as tall. Like he's overweight, I guess would be the word we're looking for there.
Yeah,
it's a seatbelt extender, yeah.
He's also 6'6", so like it might not even be overweight, but yeah, I guess he's got a belly, probably.
It's going to have to, yeah, because those extenders are there across the belly. So okay, that's fine, just so I've got the right picture in my head.
Yeah, so it says even making a two-hour flight for him, painful.
Oof.
If you or anyone you know has been in this situation, what do you normally do for long international flights? Do you purchase two seats, or are there certain seats that you recommend over others? Unfortunately, we can't afford business class, so that's out of the question. Thanks in advance.
I mean, if it's just a height thing, it's kind of a just either get an exit row, obviously, or an aisle seat so you can at least stretch your legs. My father-in-law is 6'3", and my brother-in-law is 6'4", so they have that issue in that they need the aisle so they can get their legs out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're having trouble like fitting into the seat and it's causing discomfort, I feel like your only option is to get that second seat. Which is unfortunate, and because it's not going to be cheap. But if being that crammed in is an issue, I can't think of another. There's no wider seats available generally. It's more just in like business class, which they say they can't afford. They could obviously at least only have two of them there so that there's a bit more room to spread out.
Yeah.
But I feel like you're just going to have to get the second seat. And I do know, I've seen flights where like an obese gentleman has done that, has bought two seats.
Mm-hmm.
And then like another person's on the aisle, so they've got like the window in the center or the aisle in the center, And so at least then they can sort of spread out. You can't sit between the two seats, as you probably know. It wouldn't be comfortable. But at least then you've got that room for your shoulders or your arms or to stretch your legs out.
Yeah, I definitely think aisle seat with either the extra seat in the middle so you can stretch your legs and have a bit more space side to side. I know that for, and I don't know how I know this, but for the seat extender situation, like in exit rows, you're not allowed to use seat extenders.
Yeah, so
unfortunately, I don't think that would work. But you can, like nowadays, I think that is becoming more of a well-known problem that airlines are trying to tackle. So you do have a lot of times an economy where they do provide a few extra rows that are just like the, you know, economy plus sort of ones that are a little bit, they give you a little bit more room.
And
I was just going to say, so try to find like an airline that offers that. But my other thing that I was going to say is like, I know she says we can't afford business class. That's out of the question, but I feel like if you're able to buy an extra seat,
you can probably afford business class for an
international flight. It's probably like, she's probably saying that because she wants to sit with him and so they can't afford two business class tickets, but you might, like, if you really want to get your boyfriend to Europe, you might just have to let him sit in business class
or take a cruise.
Yeah. And you you sit in economy like a bitch like the rest of us.
Another option is on some planes, the front row of a section. So there'll be bathrooms right in front. There's usually a little bit more space because that's where they'll put bassinets for sleeping kids.
Yeah.
There's a lot more leg room there. But often this also is either an exit row or it is premium economy or whatever. So you may have to speak with the airline ahead of time.
Yeah, and I know that like those seats, you usually have to pay a little extra to be able to choose your seats because a lot of airlines now won't let you just choose them.
I love when the airline gives you the option to choose your seat, but you don't have the option to not choose. But every seat costs money. Like it's like, choose your seat, and then you're like, oh, okay, and then it's like that'll be an extra $15, and I'm like, what? Well, just put me wherever.
But that would definitely be the cheapest one because you're right. Like the very first row of a section will always be bigger because I know I've just been like automatically assigned those before and I'm like, score! Like I don't have to pay extra for this.
It's a great seat to have as long as you don't mind being with kids because that's usually where any bassinets and like sleeping kids will end up being put.
I mean, Caitlin, if you really want to get your man on a trip to Europe.
I'm seriously, look at cruises. I mean, they're not cheap, but it's the experience is obviously part of the situation. Like you get a cruise. But obviously, there's a lot more room on a boat as well.
Yeah.
And like, obviously, you're going to just have to budget extra time because a cruise is nowhere near as fast as a flight. But there's an option for you.
Really? It's not?
No, weird. I know, right?
All right. You got some more questions?
Yeah, I think we've got a little bit more time. This one, again, is probably one only I'll be able to answer. But someone asked me about a lot of cities in China offer a 6-day visa on arrival. Like what are the limitations when traveling with this visa? Can I go anywhere? How does it work? So do you want to weigh in on this one, Kate, or?
I don't know anything about this.
I just thought it'd be rude. Okay. this is a quick and easy one. About a dozen, maybe more cities in China have a 6-day visa on arrival, which is awesome. And then there are several other cities that have a 3-day visa on arrival. The caveat with these is that you cannot leave that city. You can do day tours around the city, but because getting a flight anywhere else or a train anywhere else requires your passport, you will not be allowed to do that. And the other thing is you have to be leaving from the airport you came in through and your flight in or out cannot have layovers in China. So like, for example, if you fly from London to Beijing and then you're flying from Beijing to Japan, you're fine. But if your flight from Beijing to Japan has a layover somewhere else in China, you cannot get that visa on arrival because they're worried for some reason that you'll like do a dash from your layover. But yeah, it is a really good way if you don't want to deal with having to get a 2-month or 3-month or 10-year visa as the Americans get and have to provide them with a printed itinerary and proof of bookings. The 6-day visas are great. You can land in Beijing, spend a few days doing the Great Wall, doing all the sights there, and then leave again without having to wrangle all that visa paperwork. So they're a great way if you've even if you've just got like a day layover or like a 17-hour layover in Guangzhou, you can get out of the airport and travel. Up until 2 years ago, you couldn't. If you landed in China and had 30 hours to kill, you either had to apply months in advance to get your visa or you had to stay in the airport.
I mean, I can't touch on this because I don't know anything about Chinese visas and stuff like that. But I know, like, when I had my flight from Brisbane to London when I was leaving Australia years ago, and it was like the fucking trip from hell. And I think I've touched on it a little bit in like the early first season, but I had a layover in, so I landed in Bali and I was flying out of Jakarta. And so because I landed at the international terminal in Bali, but then my layover was from there to Jakarta, then I had to switch to the domestic. And literally, just because I was switching from one terminal to the other, I had to get a visa
Oh,
for
yeah,
Thailand.
that happens,
And yeah, that was a pain in the ass because I didn't have any money.
yeah.
Worst trip ever. But luckily, there are very, very kind strangers out there that helped me.
Oh.
But just definitely research this stuff ahead of time too, because if I would have known, I just didn't even think about it. Like, I booked the flight completely together, and there was
Yeah.
nothing on the flight thing that was like, hey, heads up, you're like switching terminals and we'll have to have a visa in this country.
That happened to me flying to Namibia. I landed in Johannesburg, and it was a straight ticket. But because because Namibia is classified as a domestic flight, even though it's another country, I had to land in South Africa, get a visa, and then wait at the airport for a few hours, and then go back in and fly domestically to Namibia. Thankfully, South Africa does visa on arrival, so it was painless. But I saw a number of people, including my poor boss, who's Slovenian, got detained in security and then deported back to their home country because they didn't have a visa ahead of time.
Wow.
And even though they could say, like, no, look, my ticket says I'm going to Namibia, they're like, we can't trust that. Like, we think you're trying to illegally sneak in here. Meanwhile, here's the Australian guy being like, okay, I'll see you in a few weeks then, I guess, boss. Like, my poor boss got deported back to Tanzania because she didn't realize that she'd need a visa because she didn't realize that she would be leaving the airport.
Yeah.
So do your research,
Definitely.
definitely.
Okay, this one's another kind of long one, but I feel like this is a good question to answer.
Sure.
So it's about, so it says, I have a question for you. How often do you travel back to places you've already been? Do you
Oh.
only go to new places? Obviously, you and I talk a lot about our traveling, so people know we go back to other places. But basically, she's traveling with her boyfriend and they're going to Central America. And she used to work at a hostel in Costa Rica. And so she loves it there. She knows that they can do all these fun things there. But he hasn't seen like that area of Costa Rica, and she thinks about going back all the time. But she goes, "Am I forfeiting going? But then I'm forfeiting going to new place, which I'm sure is also going to be just as incredibly cool. But it would take more planning and preparation. I know it's arbitrary to be worried about how many countries you've been to, but I can't help but feel silly for returning to the same place over and over and over again."
I mean, it is arbitrary to care how many countries you've been to. In my mind, like, I'm someone who does it. But then I'm also the son of a guy who's been to South Korea like 8 times. If you love a place, there's no, and you're never gonna, even if you've lived there. I lived in China 5 years, and I still don't know China. Like, I could still go back tomorrow and travel for another 6 months, and still be finding stuff that I didn't know or didn't see last time. Now, obviously, Costa Rica is a lot smaller than China or the US or Australia, but I think the same is true. If you love a place, there's nothing wrong with enjoying your time there, especially if you want to show it off to someone. But also, you can, and like, and I like I was born and raised in Australia, but I could not say with like authority that I know Australia that well. You know what I mean? Like, I've been to three of our states. And I'm sure that's true of you with the US, and I'm sure it's true of nearly anyone, unless you've made a point of traveling extensively in a country with the purpose of becoming an expert. Chances are you could go back 20 times and still find things that are new and exciting. Now, granted, Costa Rica, again, very small, comparatively, and maybe not 10 years of travel, but I don't think there's anything wrong with going back if it's something that you want to share with your partner or your friend. Or if it's just that you want to have a holiday that doesn't stress you out. Like, as she said, stressing, like, planning a trip to another country you've never been to is a lot more work than planning one that you know.
Yeah, I very much agree with you. And I agree with what you said as far as like, sometimes it's beautiful to go back to somewhere you've been and and that you want to share with someone. One thing, and I know this wasn't exactly her question, but one thing I want to make it a point to say is that like I've done that many times. I'm someone that like I love Croatia. I lived in Split. I used to go back to visit because I loved it so much and I loved sharing it with people. Which I think is amazing. And a lot of times it's always like resulted in people being like, yeah, I can see why you love this place. I love it too. But also don't have the expectation that it's going to be exactly how you remember it.
Oh yeah, you can never go back home. Like, I know that sounds like a cheesy thing, but it's true. You can, even if you were only there a year ago, it's going to have changed. If you're expecting it to be the same, it won't be because you have changed. And if you go in with that expectation, it'll bum you out. Like
Yeah.
it, and that's happened to me. I went back to South Korea 5 years after I'd lived there and had the time of my life. And the country had obviously changed, but the thing that had changed most was obviously me and the people. Like, the people who had made Korea so amazing for me were all gone. So
Yeah.
I could revisit my old haunts and my old bars and restaurants, and there were still a few familiar faces, but for the most part, I wasn't who I was, and so it felt weird going back. If I hadn't gone in with that expectation, I'm sure I'd have loved it. But it actually, I remember being super bummed out revisiting my old haunts in Busan and Gwangju because
Yeah.
I wasn't, they weren't what I remembered.
And then you also feel bad because you might have built it up with the person you're going with.
Oh
And then you're like, oh yeah, this is amazing,
yeah.
this is amazing, this is amazing. And you get there, and if it's different, you're like, oh fuck, sorry.
You're gonna love this bar, and then there's no one in it because people stopped going there 2 years after you
Yeah.
left.
Or maybe the place, like the thing with Split for me is like I kept taking people back there, and we had a great time and stuff like that, but Split blew up. And
Yeah,
so
oh
we go back,
yeah.
and it was way more touristy and more expensive. I'm like, yeah, it's like, I'm like, yeah, it's cheap and it's beautiful and not that many people know about it yet. And like we went back, and it was a completely different place. We still had a blast, but it, was way busier, was way more touristy, so it was a different experience. But so like I kind of felt like I had like deceived my friends,
Oh,
but we
yeah.
still had a great time. But and then another thing, like even more specific to her question, is because she's stuck talking about, going back to see a hostel that she worked at for 4 months, and I can speak on this because I've worked, especially when I worked in Mexico, I worked at a hostel for 6 months, and I fucking loved it there. Shout out Hostel Cabay. But I went back there. I went back to Mexico for my 30th, and I knew I didn't want to spend a lot of time, like pretty much any time in Cancun. So we went to see like a few new places because I wanted to go check out new places. But just I wanted to spend one night at my old hostel and just to see how it had changed and what it was like and show it to my friends I was with. And it was completely new. Like no one that I knew was still working there except one other guy. And it was great to see him. But like it was a completely new staff, a different vibe. They had redone the whole entire building, so like it didn't even look the same. The rooms were all
Oh,
different.
wow.
So like it honestly, it was like staying in a whole new hostel.
Yeah.
But it was also, but I also knew like the good local like hidden spots to go
Yeah,
have
which
dinner,
is
and like that was
super
still kind
fun.
of fun and like nostalgic. But you have to like go into it saying like some things are going to be the same and it'll be great and it will bring nostalgia to you and it'll bring good memories. But then also a lot of things are probably going to be different. It's nice going somewhere where like you know your way around still.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to be constantly worried about like where you're going and like making sure you're on the right bus or, things like that. But there are going to be a lot of things that are different as well. And as long as you are aware of that going into it, you won't be disappointed.
And depending on the country, revisiting it might not mean retreading old ground. Like, I have been to Thailand twice and I met my wife there and we honeymooned there, but we went to places we hadn't been before on our honeymoon. Like, even though we'd both been two or three times each already, we were still able, we did visit some places that I kind of had passed through in the past, but then we went to like Koh Lipe, which neither of us had been to, and it was amazing. And then we went to Malaysia, which I've been to, but we went to Langkawi, which was a new part of Malaysia for me. So, I mean, it again, Costa Rica is a hard one because it's not a huge country with a lot of diversity compared to, say, a China or a Russia or a, Australia. But I still feel like unless you really crawled over every foot of it during your last, 4 months there, you've probably got ground that you haven't covered that'll be just as much fun for you to experience as it will be for him to experience for the first time.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
All right. Do we have time for any more questions or should we?
I think we've got time for one more, and only because I actually found this question kind of funny, and not to be insulting this person that asked it.
Okay.
But I just wanted to hear what you would say about it. So
Oh,
this
God.
person asked this question, Milo.
Milo, okay.
He asked, traveling overseas for the first time, I'm a bit nervous when it comes to TSA.
Yeah.
And I have to
They
point out
suck.
he's flying to Canada.
Oh, no.
And it's just going to be his first time overseas. He said, I have no clue how it
Oh.
works. I'm a bit worried about how the TSA process would treat my possessions. I've seen people say that they've had their stuff stolen, by the staff. I don't know if it's true, but I can't stop thinking about it. I might just be paranoid, but someone fill me in on what happens.
Oh, bless. I mean, you are being paranoid, but that's not your fault. I would have been this. I had a fucking money belt on when I went on my first trip abroad. I mean, TSA sucks. I mean, American security is far and away the most, like, exhaustively thorough and also the least pleasant to talk to of anywhere I've been. But that's not saying all of them are. Like, Palm Springs Airport, terrific people. LAX, fucked a lot of them. Terrible. But it's fine. I mean, I've got a lot of expensive electronics in my bags. I've never had anything stolen. I've never had anything broken. And this is across God knows how many flights. I mean, obviously keep an eye on your stuff, you know, like when you're taking your laptop out, make sure it's sitting in there, make sure all your stuff, and be really thorough checking that you put everything back when you get it back.
Yeah.
The number of times I've seen someone leave without their laptop or their phone, it's ridiculous. And like, it's them doing it. I'll see them run off and then the person will be like, so is this your laptop? And I'll be like, no. And then they'll have to put out an announcement, or I'm going to try and find the guy so I can bring him back.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rarely, I can't imagine, especially TSA, would be stealing stuff that often. I've heard of it too. I've had stuff stolen in Tanzania. Someone stole my fucking Croc flip-flops. I don't even know why. They were ugly as shit, but they were stolen. But no, other than that, my bag came out open, like literally open on the conveyor belt, like just open to, and like everything else was accounted for. There was like, my clothing was all there, my toiletries. The only thing missing was a pair of fucking Crocs flip-flops that I'd had for like 8 years because they were the most comfortable, hideous pair of shoes I'd ever owned.
I think someone did you a favor.
Probably. There's probably some asshole walking around with. He must, you know why he's not? I have size 13 feet and Tanzanians have small feet. I'm guessing this is the only guy in Tanzania with big feet. And he was like, oh, thank God. Like, thank God some big-footed white dude came through and left some shoes I can have. Yeah. He's welcome to them. I was not getting laid with those shoes on.
No.
And
I can't imagine you were.
And now he's not either. It's a blessing and a curse.
I've never had any issues with TSA, honestly. And I'm always like, I know that their job is shit and they deal with a lot of fucking idiot people. Like, honestly, and we touched on this during our like airport episode early in the first season. Like, people in lines at the airport going through security are idiots. Like,
yeah, because it's a lot of first time travelers or like people who only travel for work, and so you've just got people who don't get how it works.
Yeah, and like people are really rude because it's almost like working in hospitality where people don't recognize you as a human being.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that. I've become as soon as I get in the security line, I'm so grumpy and I have to physically force myself to be pleasant because I'm just annoyed. I hate security. It's never pleasant, and I you'd think I'd be used to it, but it only gets worse.
Yeah, I've never had an issue with security or TSA or anything like that because I'm always just like, I know, I mean, after working here in hospitality for so many years, like how much people treat you like shit. And also just seeing people, like seeing incidents happen in airports where people just get like travelers just are really blatantly unnecessarily rude. Mm-hmm. And so I always make it a point to just be as like nice and smiley and happy to them as I can. I'm always like, good morning. Like, how are you? Like, even when I'm handing over my passport, because they usually like check your passport and your ticket first before you even get in the security line. And those people always look miserable, and I'm just like, kill them with kindness. Like, I'm always like, good morning, because like not one person in line has said good morning to them.
Yeah, it costs you nothing. It costs you nothing to be polite. Like, if their response to your politeness is to be jerkish, well then you can be surly. But yeah,
all you're gonna do is like make your trip worse as well, because then if you react to shit like that. Like, if you don't want to, like, the TSA are not the type of people that you want to pick a bone with or, like, get into an argument with, because they are the people that control whether or not to let you in to the terminal.
Oh, I'm always nice to the immigration TSA agent. Like, the security one on the way out of the place, I'm like, I'm nice. But the immigration person, they can name my firstborn. Like, I'm not pissing off an immigration agent. I'm being, especially because I come in and out of the States so often. They always ask, they're always quizzing me, and I'm like, well, I'm married to an American. Oh, so you're going to live here. Why would I do that? but they cannot get it in, like, every time they corner me and they question me for ages about what my plans are and where do I live. And I'm like, Vietnam, what are you doing there? And it's just, you just suck it up, be as nice as you can to the immigration agent. Cause even if you have a visa waiver, they still have the right to say, we don't trust you, go home.
Yeah.
So don't fuck around. Yeah.
Well,
shit.
I think that's about it for this week.
We've dealt out some knowledge this week. That I actually didn't think we had as much material as we did. We're leaving some questions on the table. I'm sorry, folks.
Yeah. Well, we'll have another episode like this, I'm sure, at some point. I really like this.
Yeah, it's fun to talk about multiple topics rather than feeling obliged to stick to the one we chose for ourselves. And then halfway through the episode, I'm like, wow, we're still talking about travel insurance.
Speaking of, next week we have a Christmas episode for you.
Yay, but that's gonna be fun. Like, we'll have some eggnog, we'll talk some shit. It'll be fine. It'll be good. That's a fun topic. And I don't mean to rag on travel insurance. That was just a really hard one to get through. Yeah. as a person speaking, I'm sure it was amazing to listen to because you got to listen to Kate and I. But I was really struggling to come up with more things to say.
It was helpful.
It was useful. Exactly.
Cool. Well, I don't think we'll play a game this week because we want to wrap this up and keep it short and sweet. But next week we do have a fun Christmas episode for you before taking a little 2-week break for the holidays. So
yeah. It'll air on Christmas Eve, I believe, too, for those listening. So that'll be a fun little Christmas treat.
To get you in the spirit.
Yay! I'll sing. No, I won't.
I'll make him sing, guys. All right. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, follow us on all of
the socials.
The socials. Why can I never remember that?
I don't know.
Airdrop that shit, and we will see you next Tuesday.